Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, welcome back in hour number four of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a big 46-25 win for the Titans against the Detroit Lions. The Titans improved to 10-4 on the year. They remain in first place in the AFC South. And Joe, just a day yesterday where the Titans did whatever they wanted to do. We talked a lot about Tannehill today here on the show. But Derrick Henry, I mean, 24 carries, 147 yards, a touchdown. Probably had more yards on the table if the Lions were able to kind of keep up with the Titans offensively. But another big day. Like, it's hard to figure that's where we've gotten with Derrick Henry. But we're like, oh, he only had 147 yards yesterday. How about that?
Yeah, it really is amazing. I mean, my goodness, he's only at 1679 with two games to go, you know? Come on, Derek.
Step it up a little bit and help us talk more about this game and all things in the NFL. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN NFL analyst. Mike, what's going on? Thanks for taking time to join us.
Morning, guys. How's it going?
So, Mike, first off, doing well. Hope you are as well. Secondly, we've been talking about Derrick Henry a lot here on the show, both today and in the past few weeks, just some of the crazy numbers that he's been able to put up at the running back position. When you watch Derrick Henry play, what comes to mind? Have you ever seen a back quite like him with the combination of the size and the speed and the stiff arm power that keeps getting put on display? Like, what comes to mind when you watch Derrick Henry?
Yeah, all those, you know, he's a man among boys. And I thought Rex Ryan had a great comment this morning when talking about yesterday's stiff arm. And Green goes, "What do you think?" And Rex goes, "Well, Josh Norman's saying, well, at least it wasn't only me." And what I would say is I think Tennessee, and look, I was privileged to sign Ryan Tannehill to an extension in Miami, and I've been a huge, huge Ryan fan my whole career. But I just feel objectively Tennessee gives Kansas City the best matchup in terms of getting to the – when you look at who's going to come out of the AFC, obviously Kansas City is the favorite, but because of Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, I think Tennessee has the best chance of beating them.
That's interesting. And, of course, Mike, we've talked about Tannehill before, a couple weeks ago. And like you said, I mean, you know him very well as anyone in this game, and you've been bullish on him as a player. Do you feel like more people are coming around on that, or will that ever happen to the extent that it probably should?
Well, yeah, probably not, because the one thing that Ryan Tannehill doesn't do a good job of is promote himself. You know, that's not the way that he's hardwired. You know, and I think that's one of the many reasons his teammates love him, is because he's genuine, he's selfless, he cares deeply for each and every one of them. He prepares hard, he deflects praise and owns setbacks, and I think there's so much good about him. And on the national stage, it's still, I think, a little bit under the radar in terms of what he's done over the last 16 games with Mike Vrabel and Arthur Smith, and Tennessee deserves so much credit, and I think they're going to be in it all the way to the end.
Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN NFL analyst, on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Mike, a big game coming up next week, Sunday Night Football, between the Titans and the Green Bay Packers, and Aaron Rodgers firmly in the MVP race right now. Is this the best that we've ever seen Aaron Rodgers play, even given his age?
Yeah, and it probably, and what's remarkable is, you know, who's the second best target on Green Bay, you know? Is it Alan Lazard when healthy? Is it Marquise Scaldez-Vantling? Is it now, you know, who is it? And every week it seems like we're going to be talking about somebody else. And that really shows the greatness of Aaron Rodgers. You know, when we're looking at players that make others better, that's a great example. You know, it's hard to say who their second best option is, and that's all because of Aaron Rodgers' greatness.
I think Joe left him. There
Mike, sorry. More mute button issues. What did you make, Mike, of the this Chiefs-Saints game yesterday? I know Drew Brees just getting back doesn't have Michael Thomas. I thought defensively they actually did some good things, and then, you know, what do you do sometimes with Patrick Mahomes? But what is your takeaway from that game, which I think could potentially be a Super Bowl preview?
Yeah, it could be. But I think what we saw in that game was some vulnerabilities with the Saints. You know, I thought Drew Brees understandably looked slow initially, missed his first 9 passes. You know, Michael Thomas just hasn't been the same this year. And in a game, you know, that they have to have, like, who's their go-to guy after Alvin Kamara? You know, and that would be a concern of mine if I'm the Saints. And, you know, on the other side of the ball, I love their secondary, but that throw that Patrick Mahomes made at the end of the second quarter to the back of the end zone to Mecole Hardman was just, it was just incredible to watch. So, there's a reason he's an all-time great. And I don't know who's going to come out of the NFC. If I had to pick a team, I'd probably say it's Green Bay. I just think New Orleans, their lack of sort of consistency on offense is a big concern.
Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN NFL analyst, on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike, an interesting game tonight from the Steelers' vantage point, looking ahead against the Bengals, and then obviously a huge matchup next week between the Steelers and the Colts. And it just looks like offensively Pittsburgh has struggled the last few weeks. When you evaluate the Steelers, what do you see, and what sort of a threat do you think they are in the AFC?
I'm a little concerned about Ben Roethlisberger's age. You know, when you just watch him, he wants to get rid of the ball quick. You know, he's close to the end, in my opinion. He doesn't get the ball down the field. He's done a great job of assembling run after catch receivers. You know, this year was Chase Claypool. It's been James Washington in the past, Smith-Schuster. I think when it's all said and done, I like Tennessee more. I think they're the more complete offense. You know, I think Tennessee has some struggles defensively, but I just think Ben's days are, you know, he's just an older, aging quarterback, in my opinion.
And then when you look ahead to Tampa Bay, I mean, you've got the Bucs out there, and it looks like in one half, they don't know how to move the ball forward, and they can't put up any points. And then yesterday they come storming back against Atlanta. What sort of a threat do you think Tom Brady and company is in the NFC?
You know, here's what's so fascinating about our sport, guys. If we were playing 4 out of 7, you would take Green Bay, certainly, maybe even Seattle. But in one game, it's Tom Brady. And, boy, he could just he could pick you apart. And unfortunately for me, I saw it for over 20 years between the Jets and the Dolphins. But he is so smart. He knows where he's going to go with the ball. And they have so many weapons. And, you know, Antonio Brown made a big play yesterday. So, you know, one game season, you can't rule them out because they're just too talented.
On the young quarterback side of things, and the other side, Mike, Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, they seem to be surging. How seriously do you take them as a contender in the AFC?
Yeah, I think that's the perfect word. They are surging, and I think they're going to be a tough out. You know, Josh Allen's a guy whose completion percentage has gotten, like, historically better, which is just, you know, something that you just don't see usually from an accuracy standpoint. You are what you are, but to his credit, he's gotten better. And I think defensively they're solid. They don't really dominate, but they're really well coached. They don't beat themselves, and they're going to have at least one home playoff game. And even without fans there, it's going to be cold in Buffalo, a little bit like Green Bay. And they're a team that, again, I don't think they could beat Kansas City, and I put them a notch below Tennessee just because of Derrick Henry, but that's a team that I don't think Kansas City wants to see anytime soon.
Mike, last thing for you here is, as you look at A.J. Brown, obviously we see what he's able to do with the ball in his hands after the catch. How close is he, in your opinion, to becoming an elite receiver in the game, or has he already gotten there in your mind? What are the next steps for A.J. Brown?
Yeah, I think we got to go back and look at that Ole Miss tape from 3 years ago and see how come they're not putting up 50 between him and DK, right?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, it's just insane how good both of them are. And what I love about AJ is I feel like he fits that John Robinson, Mike Vrabel model of tough, strong, you know, this guy, he is hard, hard to tackle. And he, to me, he's a frontline one, and I think he just fits really well in terms of, like, some of those underneath plays we've seen, like shallow crosses, slants. And I certainly see him as a number one. I don't know what element of the game he doesn't have to be a one. So it's nice to see Corey Davis come along, and I think he's another element that could help as Tennessee goes down this, you know, playoff run. But, boy, I think they hit big on A.J. Brown, and I think he'll be a frontline one for years to come.
ESPN NFL analyst Mike Tannenbaum has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Mike, really appreciate you taking time to join us. Great stuff.
Thanks, guys. Happy holidays.
Absolutely. Same to you. And, Joe, it's interesting. Like, you hear him talk about A.J. Brown there, and we've had the discussion several times here on the show. I wrote about this on Friday at thegamenashville.com. You know, it's interesting, like, in this Titans offense, the numbers, I think, on a week-by-week basis, they're not always going to be there. Like, I thought he played fine yesterday, but he ends up with 5 catches for 44 yards and a touchdown. So with the different options the Titans have, and then obviously, you know, the bell cow and Derrick Henry that you want to give the ball to as much as possible, like, I'm not sure that A.J. Brown is going to put up, like, these eye-popping numbers that you would consider elite wide receivers to have. But I think he's right on the doorstep of being a guy that, you know, from a after the catch standpoint to running with the ball in his hands to how difficult he is to bring down, he is right on the doorstep. And it is amazing, like, to think back to that Ole Miss offense with DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown and how they didn't, like, win more games than they did is beyond me. Just that's how bad the Ole Miss defense was.
Right. And I mean, A.J. Brown in a different offense, I think, could have much bigger numbers.
Yeah.
You could probably say the same thing about Jonnu Smith. You know, it's – I mean, and so I guess from that standpoint, you know, this offense in a way hinders him. But I think also the play-action element of this offense has opened the door for a lot of big plays that he's made as well. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's amazing, really, that – they are so close to so many offensive players reaching those milestone numbers, you know, 1,000 yards for two receivers maybe. You know, obviously Derrick Henry will have a monster – it already is a monster number for him. You know, Tannehill can be at 4,000 passing. That's hard to do, you know, to have an offense that well-rounded and everyone get numbers like that. But when you have almost perfect balance like they have, you can have numbers like that for a lot of different people. And, of course, you also are just about as hard as any offense in this league to deal with outside of the one that we talk about all the time as the number one offense.
And it's interesting. You heard Mike Tannenbaum there say that the Titans he considers to be the biggest threat in the AFC to the Chiefs. And we talked about it last week. A lot of people were going with Buffalo. I think you and Porth talked yourselves into the Titans by the end of the show last week. Pittsburgh sits there at 11-2, the number two seed right now. And it seems like, with the way that Roethlisberger has played, they're becoming less and less of a factor in the AFC, according to people nationally. I would agree with that. Like, just watching Pittsburgh play, it just doesn't look like they have it on offense with Roethlisberger. But right now, Tannenbaum's got – he's got the Titans at number two in the AFC. It's a revolving door.
Yeah, no, and I don't think he's off base there. I mean, I think it's close. Look, I think Cleveland right now is a dangerous team.
Yeah,
you know? Like, even though the Steelers, like, the Browns cannot deal with the Steelers, as long as they don't have to actually play the Steelers, I like the Browns. You know, I really think they can make a run. And the Colts, too, a dangerous team. But I think the Titans as the most dangerous team to Kansas City makes sense. In terms of, you look at, like, who's stopping the Chiefs? Nobody is, right? So who can score with them? The Titans have the best chance. Problem is the Titans defense may – you know, give up 45 to them, whereas, like, the Colts would only give up 31. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at it that way. But, hey, look, you're going to have to beat them with offense, and the best offense outside of Kansas City is in Nashville.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans and the Lions. Get your reaction as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the wholesaling studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 1025, the game.
Yeah, all those, you know, he's a man among boys. And I thought Rex Ryan had a great comment this morning when talking about yesterday's stiff arm. And Green goes, "What do you think?" And Rex goes, "Well, Josh Norman's saying, well, at least it wasn't really me." what I would say is I think Tennessee, and look, I was privileged to sign Ryan Tannehill to an extension in Miami, and I've been a huge, huge Ryan fan my whole career. But I just feel objectively Tennessee gives Kansas City the best matchup in terms of getting to the – when you look at who's going to come out of the AFC, obviously Kansas City is the favorite, but because of Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, I think Tennessee has the best chance of beating them.
That was Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN on with us on the last segment, talking about the Titans, maybe the biggest threat to the Chiefs in the AFC. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, if you break it down by the numbers, the two best offenses in the NFL are with the Titans and with the Chiefs from a point standpoint. The Titans have scored the most points in the league, one more than the Kansas City Chiefs and two more than the Green Bay Packers, which they'll see on Sunday. So let me ask you this, Joe. I think we've all just assumed all season long that the Chiefs have the best offense in the league because they probably have the best player in the league in Patrick Mahomes. He's been dominant. Obviously, we saw what he did last year in the Super Bowl. He's having another historic season this year for Kansas City. Is it possible that the Titans have a better offense than the Chiefs? How would you answer that question?
I would say no. Just, and the funny thing is it's because of the quarterback, and the Titans quarterback is, I think, top five this year in the NFL. But again, like you just, I watched the whole Saints Chiefs game yesterday. It's just some of the plays that he makes to extend plays and then step up. And then eventually like you're just cooked, you know, not to mention who he's throwing to. So not to mention, now, I will say this, too. I haven't heard anything, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire, that did not look good.
No.
His injury late in the game. And he is a really good player. He is clearly their best back. Le'Veon Bell is going to end up being a clutch pickup for them, especially if that's a long-term thing. But Edwards-Helaire, they can run the ball when they need to. You know, it's sort of like, well, okay, let's run the ball. And they can do it. So I would say no, but I do think it's close. You know, I mean, I think it's absolutely close. And the balance the Titans have, we have not seen many offenses like this at all in the NFL. When you talk about balance, I mean, I look at the Packers. So, I mean, you look at points and there's a top tier and then there's a pretty big drop off to Seattle and Buffalo. But 436 points for the Titans, 435 for the Chiefs, 434 for the Packers. You know, those are your top three. And the Packers have that with Aaron Jones, with that running game. They have a nice balance too, but they, of course, have Devontae and the no-names out catching the ball. I just think the Titans, in terms of variety of targets, quarterback play, and then obviously an MVP candidate at running back that none of these other teams can boast. It's very close.
It's close. I mean, they go about it in different ways. I mean, the Titans offense with Derrick Henry, when he's running the way he's running right now, I mean, I just don't know how you stop it. And they talked about this a little bit yesterday on the broadcast with Spiro Dedis and Adam Archuleta. I mean, you've just got Derrick Henry when he's running downhill like that. There's not much you can do. And then, oh, by the way, you factor in A.J. Brown and Corey Davis and Ryan Tannehill playing the way he played yesterday. I thought Corey Curtis brought up a great point earlier in the show when he was on with us. Tannehill yesterday early on was so aggressive with the ball. I mean, the tight window throws that he was making and just the accuracy that he put on display yesterday. Look, he's been good, and he's been good ever since he got here. We know that. But it felt like yesterday early in the game, it was almost at a different level. Like, he was putting the ball in places where, like, he lets go of it, and you look at where the Lions are defensively, and you think to yourself, man, I don't know if you should be throwing that ball, but it ends up right on target, right where it should be, in perfect timing. And he was as on point early on in that game yesterday as I've seen him in the Titans jersey. And when you factor all of those things in to an offense, I mean, it's just tough to stop. I mean, I get it. It's the Lions defense yesterday. They suck. They're not good. I understand that. There wasn't a whole lot of defenses that play that are going to stop the Titans yesterday when they were clicking the way they were clicking.
No. I mean, he was ripping it. He was ripping it, and you're right. He was going to tight windows. Also, some really good catches in there.
Yeah.
From some of the Titans, Jonnu Smith and Pruitt both had really to hold on for their lives to catch the ball on some of those passes. But yeah, he was outstanding. And how many, you know, who has? I mean, basically, if you look at this whole season for the Titans, I mean, really, who has stopped this offense? I think basically they had some struggles, you know, when they lost Lawan early. I mean, you know, they kind of stopped themselves against the Bengals. And of course the game got away from them. I mean, that was their low point, was obviously that 34-17 loss to the Colts. The game got away from them. They made some mistakes to help that. But I mean, since then it's just been, you know, you're talking about five straight weeks of big time production. You could put an asterisk on the Browns game because they were playing against a team that just wanted to get out of there. They still did score 35, though. And I mean, if they play the Browns again, and right now that's the matchup, it's Titans 4, Browns 5 back in Nashville. If things ended today, and it's very possible that's how it ends up, you know, I think both teams would be scoring a lot of points in that game. I think the final score could be similar to that, probably with just a more competitive game from start to finish.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan in Nashville texts in and says, which will be harder for the Titans to do against the Packers on Sunday? Get to Aaron Rodgers or shut down Davante Adams? That's a good question. I mean, I don't really like their chances to do either one, but I would say at this point, getting to Aaron Rodgers is probably more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, like Corey Curtis said earlier also, that he would have Malcolm Butler match up with Davante Adams. I mean, they're not going to play man the whole game, but when they do play man, honestly, I hear what he's saying, but boy, I don't know that I wouldn't go with Adoree. I mean, just because Adoree is just a little bit faster than Malcolm Butler. But either way, I mean, to me, I'm bracketing the heck out of Davante Adams. I'm doing everything I can, and I know this is what a lot of teams do. You watch the Packers a lot, obviously, as a Packers fan, so you know that teams have been trying to take Davante Adams away, and they still haven't been able to. But, yeah, I think there's still things you can do to try to limit one receiver. I don't know what the Titans do to get to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, they're going to have to gamble and risk and send extra people. That's the only way.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Adams is he lines up everywhere, and he will line up at every position, and he will run every route. That they use him in so many different ways. The Panthers actually did a good job this past Saturday of kind of taking him away. And the Panthers, they run a weird defense. They run like a 3-3-5 stack. It's almost like a college defense. And they were basically double-teaming Adams the whole game. So if you're the Titans, like, you can go that route and you can try to double-team him. And then you run the risk of, you know, Lazard or Valdes-Scantling running down the field. I mean, that's you look at the Packers' weapons, they don't have a ton out there, but it is interesting. It's an interesting problem that it creates for the Titans' defense. But I do wonder, though, like getting Adoree back in there, how much does that help? Maybe in a matchup like this where you look around and outside of Adams, I mean, the Packers don't have a lot of weapons that just freak you out on defense, I think. So I am interested to see how they choose to cover him in this game because, I mean, he's been the best wide receiver in the league this year. I mean, the numbers bear that out. If you're the Titans defensively, that's got to be your number one game plan or number one part of your game plan is finding a way to slow down Davante Adams.
Right. And, you know, the timing here is, I mean, it works out in terms of get him a game, get him out there. I think he had 27 snaps.
Yeah.
You know, so he got some decent work in this game, and you might see a big uptick in his workload if he has a good, strong week of practice and he shows no ill effects of playing in that game yesterday. Because if he's good enough to play and be active, then this is the type of game where you could really use him for most of the game out there. You know, King, Adoree, Butler for a full game at corner. You know, you might get Kenny Vaccaro back, which I think that's an underrated absence the last couple weeks. And, it hasn't hurt the Titans a ton, but – you know, I think Byard had a good game yesterday. I think Vaccaro coming back. That's a good secondary. This is a bad defense. That's a good secondary. Does that mean it's enough to slow down the Packers? I mean, this is the problem with not affecting quarterbacks, you know? I mean, you've got to affect them. But with a secondary like that, does Mike Vrabel feel more comfortable taking some gambles and pressuring more often? Shane Bowen calling the plays. I mean, maybe this helps them shift the way they go about things a little bit. But it's still like a certain amount of a game, you have to count on four guys to do something. You know, you have to count on Landry breaking free at some point. a Roberson getting in there and making a play. I mean, at least a little bit of that. You can't blitz the whole game.
When's the last time the Titans had a matchup this late in the regular season that I think fans are this excited about? Like, this is a huge game on Sunday between the Packers and the Titans. Two playoff-looking teams. It's at Lambeau. You've got two MVP candidates in the mix and Aaron Rodgers and Derrick Henry. Like, you know, Corey Curtis said it earlier on the show. He couldn't remember the last time you had a Week 16 matchup like this for the Titans. I mean, this is huge.
It is, and I think it's been a long time. It's a good question to go back on that. And another thing is, I mean, this is the Titans in primetime, and NFL fans in general should be giddy about this game.
Yeah.
You know, it's and not just because it's Aaron Rodgers, because it's Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. I mean, this is a game that has potential to be just a track meet and a lot of fun to watch. Also, on the weather front, looks like it's going to be probably mid-20s and overcast right now. I mean, obviously, a lot can change in the next few days, but it's not going to be – it doesn't look like it's going to be, you know, like blizzard conditions or anything. So both these offenses should be able to operate.
Make sure you're tuning in to this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week, a battle between the New York Giants and the Baltimore Ravens. Kickoff is at noon, so make sure you're tuned in for that. Some big playoff implications there for the Titans. When we come back, we'll dive back into some college football. The college football playoff rankings are out. Did the committee get it right? Who is the most left out? Who has the biggest gripe with the NCAA? We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, it was a pretty fascinating championship weekend in college football over the weekend. I mean, the SEC title game is a lot of fun. There are a lot of points scored in that game between Alabama and Florida. Both offenses looked pretty good. I was surprised that Florida was able to move the ball as well as they did against Alabama. I thought they'd score. I thought they'd put up 25, 30 points, somewhere around there. But get into the 40s against that Alabama defense, I was surprised, I have to say.
Yeah, brings me back to Friday when Ryan Porth was shaming my pick of Florida and the points.
Good week for you in Pigskin Pick'em, by the way.
I went 4-1. Can you believe it?
No.
So I'm only 10 games under 500 on the year. So, but yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Kyle Trask was really good, you know, and that was, it looked like it was maybe going to get away from the Gators, but they deserve a lot of credit for fighting in that game. And it does bring up a little bit more questions about Alabama's defense. It's not a great defense. It's not a defense that I like much in the matchup against Trevor Lawrence, but it's also, to me, I mean, that was a display of Alabama's offense just absolutely, it's just unstoppable, you know, and it really does start up front. I mean, when you control things like that offensive line does, and then obviously the skill is, I mean, you're a bunch of guys who are going to play on Sundays. And by the way, Jalen Waddle used to be on this team and isn't anymore. It's ridiculous. But Florida, that is a special offense. I mean, that, you know, that loss to LSU. Well, frankly, I mean, if you're Florida, you think about the LSU game, you think about the Texas A&M game too. You have a late fumble in that game. This is definitely like an all-time what-could-have-been season for the Gators.
So just think about this stat line for like the three guys on Alabama that you would consider to be on some level a Heisman Trophy candidate. Like if you went into this game, if you're just for the sake of this conversation, all things being equal between Mac Jones, Najee Harris, and Devontae Smith, just listen to this stat line. Mac Jones, 33 of 43, 418 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. Najee Harris, 31 carries, 178 yards, 2 touchdowns, adds another 3 touchdowns receiving with 5 catches and 67 yards. And then, oh, by the way, Devontae Smith, 15 catches, 184 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Like, it's just freakish what that offense is able to do. And like you said, I mean, Jalen Waddle, at one point, you could have made an argument was the best player on the offense, and he's not even there.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, Najee Harris is a guy who has kind of faded. I mean, I didn't think of him as a legit Heisman candidate going into the weekend, but then I'm watching that game like, boy, are you sure? Because, I mean, he's not just a great running back, but boy, did he show something in the pass receiving game. And you'll think about even, and I know that it's not necessarily Derrick Henry's strength, but I mean, Nick Saban has not been a guy who loves throwing to his backs a lot. Now, it depends on, you know, certain guys have done more, like Yeldon did more. But, I mean, that's not been a huge part of this offense. But, I mean, Najee Harris is he can do everything. So, it's amazing. And it makes it really tough. As a Heisman voter, I had a really tough time with this. And after watching Trevor Lawrence against Notre Dame, I had a really tough time because really – If you are purely saying who is the best player in college football, if that's all you're asking, then I think Trevor Lawrence is the easy answer. I think he's the clear answer. That doesn't necessarily mean he's the Heisman winner. It's still performance in a given year relative to other top candidates. But I mean, Trevor Lawrence is going number one in the draft. Does that mean he should win the Heisman? No. But I think when you watch how he toyed with Notre Dame, my goodness, he can do whatever he wants, and they're going to be tough to beat in this playoff because of him.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, he was ridiculous in that game, and he put up 322 yards through the air, two touchdowns, one interception. Also, 90 yards on the ground in that game and a touchdown for Trevor Lawrence as well. And honestly, Joe, like, it got to one point in the game for Notre Dame where I was thinking to myself, are they playing their way out of the college football playoff? Like, Clemson was so dominant in that game that I thought – for a minute, there may be a chance that Notre Dame gets left out. Obviously, they didn't. They end up as the number four seed. Ohio State moves up to three, and then Alabama and Clemson in the one and two spots. But I did think for about a 30-minute stretch that Notre Dame, if they're not careful in this game, they could find themselves on the outside looking in.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that was on the table. And, hey, I don't have any idea if another two touchdown deficit makes the difference, but I wouldn't have wanted to mess with that if I were Notre Dame, because Texas A&M has a claim to this. I mean, look, like, it's funny to hear coaches make their cases, because whatever your particular situation is, that all of a sudden is like, how could you possibly, you know, like, if you're Ohio State, it's like, we're undefeated Big Ten champs. I mean, how would you possibly leave us out? Jimbo Fisher's like, we lost one game playing all SEC games. How could you possibly leave that team out? Well, because there's other teams that didn't lose games. But you know what? The Notre Dame-Texas A&M argument, I think it's a good one. I think there's a case there when you think about Trevor Lawrence missing the Notre Dame win over Clemson, and then how big of a gap was apparent between those two teams Saturday. And Texas A&M's case, of course, is, yeah, we lost 52-24 to Bama. That was a long time ago. We've gotten better. It's close.
Well, and Jimbo Fisher made sure to point out, like, immediately after the Tennessee game, like, by the way, when we played Alabama, they had Jalen Waddle, and they hadn't had him lately. It was amazing how quickly he went to that.
Oh, yeah. They've all got their talking points ready for this. And then you get to the talking points of Gary Barta, who is a wind-up doll and just blah, blah, blah. You know, Cincinnati, of course, we have the most respect for them. Yeah, okay. All right, Gary Barta. Yeah, they've got a chance. You know, this is not an invitational and all that stuff, but, you know, I mean, it's poor Cincinnati. I mean, look, the bottom line is they just didn't have the games you need, but that's a very sobering reality when you can be as good as they've been all year and still have a lot of quality wins, you know, and really have zero chance of getting in this thing.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and says, they 100% got it right. There's no exact formula and no accountability. They can do whatever they want. We can't change it anyway. So you might as well just trust the process. Four good teams made the playoff, so it worked out well enough.
Well, we can't complain about this? Come on.
That's what we do.
This is our right as Americans on talk radio to complain about this. But, yeah, look, I mean, that's the thing. I can't sit here and say they got it wrong, you know? I think there's a case for Texas A&M. I think there's a case for Cincinnati. I think the way things went Saturday made it much easier and less messy for the committee than it could have been. And look, ultimately, we got a good playoff, and really, we're hoping to get two of three good games. And that's the other thing here. Is the problem is not just the committee or how many teams are in or whatever. The problem is there are three programs right now that are on a different level from everyone else, from year after year after year of stacking talent, developing talent. They just are far beyond everyone else. And so we expect to have a blowout in one of the semifinals, a great game probably in the other, and then, you know, hopefully a great championship game. But that's the best we can hope for. So if you expand that, then you're mostly adding blowouts.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sam texts in and says, 2019 LSU versus 2020 Alabama. Ooh. Who do you got? It might be the first one to 70 points. I don't know who I would take in that, ooh, but it would be a great game. I would love to see it.
I tell you what, that's a great question. It's amazing. It's amazing what this league has been churning out. And let's not forget, you know, before Tua injury, 2018 Alabama.
Yeah.
Last year, of course, I mean, that was a shootout. I think I'd probably take LSU just because I think Burrow last year was not going to be denied.
Agreed.
And Mac Jones is great, and he might win the Heisman, but Joe Burrow arguably had the greatest quarterback season in college football history, and I just think he makes the one more play to win that game. But, boy, would I love to watch it.
Oh, I would too. I don't even know if it's arguable. Like, I think Joe Burrow flat out had the best season we've ever seen from a college quarterback last year. He was unbelievable.
And still, that team last year might get outscored by this Alabama offense. I mean, yeah, it's a legit, it's, you know, it's a, that would be a dream matchup. But I think that Alabama Clemson, if Clemson is what they looked like, I think they're going to beat Ohio State. And Alabama Clemson this year could be a pretty dreamy game too.
It could. Until I see somebody stop Alabama's offense, they're my favorite to win the national title. I look at their offense. I have no clue what you do to stop that team. And I mean, the offensive line is fantastic. That's the part that doesn't get talked about a lot is like we see Smith and Mac Jones and Harris, all these different weapons that they have. That offensive line is incredible. I mean, that's one of the best offensive lines they've had there. So until I see a team stop that team, they're going to be my favorite. But you know, I think there's a lot of Alabama Clemson fatigue out there in the country. And this is one year where I certainly would not mind seeing that again. I think it would be a great game.
Yeah. I mean, there's fatigue that all year long we watch them thrash everyone, yeah, and we know who's going to be in there, and we're sick of – but I mean, we don't have fatigue about watching them play each other, right? Like, I don't.
I don't.
You know, like, if that's the payoff for all these weeks of knowing what's going to happen and also – all the focus on the playoff, which seems to detract from everything else in college football, is if we do get that game, then, I mean, I'm a happy football fan because it should be amazing.
There was some great news over the weekend regarding the NHL and the return of hockey very soon. We'll break it all down for you next and tell you exactly where the Predators fit into this mix. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We spent a lot of time, Joe, talking about the Titans today, and we'll continue to break down the matchup. Looking ahead to the Green Bay game this week, we'll be with you all the way until Wednesday this week, this holiday week here in Nashville. But some more big news in the world of sports over the weekend. The NHL and the Players Association agreeing to a 56-game schedule, which will feature all divisional play in the regular season. So basically, what the NHL has done here, given the border situation between the United States and Canada, the Canadian teams will all play in one division. So for 56 games, if you're a Canadian team, you are playing against the other Canadian teams, and that's going to be your division. And they've gone that route in the United States as well, where if you're the Predators, you're still in the Central Division, but it looks a little different this year. Instead of, you know, Colorado being in there and St. Louis and Minnesota, you've got Carolina, Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Detroit, Florida, and Tampa Bay. That's the new look Central Division for this year, and the Predators will play against those teams for the 56-game regular season schedule. And then at the end of it, the top four teams in each division will make the playoffs, and that's how the Stanley Cup playoffs will be conducted this year. But no St. Louis in the division, no Minnesota in the division, no Colorado in the division for the Predators either. So you may look at it and think to yourself, all right, well, you've got Tampa Bay and you've got Dallas in there. That was the Stanley Cup final two really good teams there. Outside of that, I mean, the division with Detroit and Florida, Carolina, Chicago, Columbus, I mean, it's an interesting division. I think, quite frankly, an easier division for the Predators heading into this season.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's not a bad deal. This is like Game of Thrones, too. The North.
Yes.
The North. Calgary, Edmonton, Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Winnipeg. It's very interesting. And also, the playoff format is going to be different this year. So you're going to have straight up 1-4, yep. 2-3 in the divisions. And, I mean, there's still some things to work out, like, you know, Canadian teams playing U.S. teams, you know, the postseason, all that stuff. Exactly how things will look. Roster size is an interesting thing here, too. So, really, this sets up to where the Preds probably have a little bit more flexibility with some of those young guys, as my understanding is, yep. To be up and down and you know, see what they have. So, maybe that helps them as well. But, yeah, I mean, look, I think there's a lot of – I mean, I think there's a real chance with this division to – probably do a little bit better than if you were in a normal season.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a chance there too. And you mentioned kind of the way the roster looks this year. You're going to be required at all times this year to carry three goaltenders. So, like, you know that the Predators will carry UC Saros and Pekka-Rinne. They're going to have a third goaltender with them at all times on the taxi squad, which is news. It's basically a 4-6-man taxi squad is what they're calling it, with players that are available, you know, in case you run into a pinch with COVID or anything like that, you run into some roster issues, a different approach being taken by the NHL this year. And obviously there's also an opt-out clause as well. So players can opt out if they have concerns over the coronavirus, and we'll see what happens with that, how popular that is. But a different looking season. If you're the Predators, like, it's interesting because we talked in the offseason about how much different they're going to look next year. From a roster standpoint, you've got a lot of departures. Kyle Turris, Nick Bonino, Craig Smith, Mikael Granlund, all these guys gone. Even on defense, you've got some differences there with Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning coming in. I mean, it's going to be a really different-looking team this year. And it's like you come into a season expecting to play against, you know, St. Louis and Colorado and Minnesota, some of these teams that you're very familiar with in the West, like even teams out West like, you know, Anaheim and L.A. that are those bigger body teams that you play kind of that, you know, pushing around, trying to get every inch of the ice style. And then you flip it around in Carolina. They're young. They're fast. Tampa Bay, obviously very fast. Chicago, young and fast. Detroit, young and fast. Like, it's interesting how stylistically the change in this division right now. I don't know if that helps or hurts the Predators. I think, you know, obviously Detroit and Chicago, you expect them to be pretty bad this year, but you've got an interesting stylistic shift, I think, going from, you know, Tampa and Carolina and these younger teams and faster teams as opposed to St. Louis.
So you're saying that the Preds could actually be, like, physical relative to the competition a lot of nights?
I think so.
That has not been the case in a long time.
Yeah.
So the taxi goalie, that will that be Connor Ingram? Or is that where you want him to keep getting his work that he would normally be getting? And make it someone who's just sort of a reach just in an emergency. Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, because basically last year, Connor Ingram and Troy Groznik were splitting time with Milwaukee. I mean, they would literally alternate games. So, I mean, obviously both played well. Milwaukee at the time where the pause happened last year was in first place in the American Hockey League. You don't have that luxury anymore. So if you're the Predators, would you be better off having Connor Ingram play in Milwaukee? Or would you be better off kind of having him hang around? Like, I'm interested to see what they do from that aspect. Because, look, I think Connor Ingram, he's an interesting guy to look at. I mean, he was a pretty high-level prospect with Tampa Bay, and it just didn't work out there. And the Predators got him for basically nothing, a seventh-round pick. But he played great last year. Like, I'm interested to see if maybe long-term he's a guy that could play in the NHL level. I don't know how the Predators are going to approach that. Even with a guy like Philip Tomasino, like, if you think he's close – and maybe he's not quite ready to play right out of the gate at the NHL level, are you better off kind of keeping him around on the taxi squad than you would be sending him off to play in junior again where he's already just totally dominated? I mean, it's an interesting kind of predicament that this presents for the Predators and for David Poile.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, look, there's reasons that this is done. The reason is you do expect issues. You expect to be missing guys, and just like in every other sport where they're not in a bubble. The hockey's not in a bubble anymore. They're going to be dealing with the same stuff everybody else is. So I would guess that you probably would lean toward having those guys in the taxi squad situation, even though it takes away some work and some development. I mean, there's a real chance you're going to need them for stretches.
Yeah, and now the start date, January 13th, training camp opens up, I believe, on January the 3rd. So you're not going to have any exhibition games. You're going to have basically 10 days of practice, and then the real thing starts. I mean, they haven't released the full schedule yet at this point, so we'll see exactly when and who the Predators are playing against when they start. But I think the scheduling is going to be interesting this year, too. I would expect to see a lot more of kind of that baseball-styled homestand. Like, you could go into a weekend and play, you know, Friday night, Saturday night, Monday night in Tampa Bay. Like, that could be the way that the NHL decides to handle it this year with the amount of games that they're trying to get in, trying to get the season done and the playoffs started by May 8th.
Yep, and then you get to Seattle expansion draft, July 21st. So who will the Kraken take from your Preds? We get to talk another year about who they're protecting. So just to add to the excitement.
Yes, anytime you can have some NHL expansion draft talk, I know that's a popular topic of conversation around here. So, Joe, as you look at this, as you look at where the Predators fit into this division, are they a top four team in your opinion? Yeah, Columbus, pretty good. Carolina's good. Tampa Bay's good. Dallas just went to the Stanley Cup final. Do you think the Predators can get in there as the top four team in the Central Division?
I think so. I mean, I there's a lot we still don't know about this team, but I think this sets up better for the Preds to be in the postseason than the normal year. I think there'd be more question because I think that they're a top four team in this particular division, and they should be. So still so much to find out, of course. But if I had to predict right now, it would have been harder for me to pick the Predators to make the playoffs without this setup. With this setup, I think it's easy to make that prediction. Maybe wrong, but I think it's a clear choice that they're the fourth best team in the Central.
And it certainly looks like it fits their situation a lot better than it would have otherwise done under the previous way. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5, The Game.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you got to do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're going to give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.